This is a podcast from ABC Overnights. Here's Michael Pavlich.
It's time to talk history with one of our favourite historians, Dr. Emma Southern, who's the presenter of a podcast called The History is Sexy Podcast, and it's a beauty. Every time I listen to it, I've been very entertained. Em, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Hey, great topic you got for us this morning.
I hope so. I hope it's one that introduces some new names to people.
Indeed, I haven't heard of any of them. And one of them I've heard of.
Good. So
basically, Emma's put through her top 10 coolest women rulers of all time.
Yeah, the really badass ones.
It's a big call.
Yeah.
I think just to establish parameters here, I need to find out why a couple of the names are missing from here that I would have thought should be on here. So no Cleopatra.
Probably because you've already heard of them. So.
Oh, okay. All right. So these are the more obscure ones. Would Cleopatra, is she cool?
She's very cool, yes. So she would, I'm always interested in adding extra names to the list of any kind of list of famous women. So there's always ones that we already know about, like Boudicca and Elizabeth the First and Cleopatra. But I think that I always worry that if we tell the same stories over and over again, it looks like they were the only ones. but actually, there's loads of female rulers who were doing sometimes terrible and sometimes brilliant things all over the world. So I have only chosen ones I reckon people won't have heard of so much.
All right. And we don't want any modern rulers. You haven't got Margaret Thatcher in there, I noticed.
No, modern rulers, not if they were elected.
But do we want to do them in any particular order, Em?
We can do them whatever order you want. Who's your favourite?
Well, there was a couple of them that stood out to me. One was the Syrian leader Zenobia.
Zenobia is great.
Yeah, and she's become a bit of mythology in modern-day Syria, hasn't she? She's highly revered, I think.
She is. She is considered to be these days a Syrian folk hero, a real legend. She was on their money for a long time. She's been the subject of lots of Syrian TV shows and books, and she's considered to be kind of a Syrian national hero of fighting against Roman power because she lived in the 3rd century during what is known as the crisis of the Roman 3rd century, when every man and his dog was attempting to become Roman emperor. And she is the one and only woman during that time, which lasted for about 50 years, who decided to try and join in that and try to make herself Roman emperor. And raised an army in Syria, in Palmyra, where she lived, and then invaded first Arabia, and then she invaded and took over Alexandria and basically declared herself to be the Roman Empress.
And did well, too. In fact,
Egypt is huge.
Was she the only Roman Empress ever?
She's the only one who kind of properly marched on Rome or marched on Egypt anyway. So there's a couple of others. There's another Syrian one called Julia Maesa, who technically made her grandson the emperor, Elagabalus, he's called. He's quite famous. But she technically made him emperor and made herself Augusta. But Zenobia comes kind of out of nowhere in this period of real crisis and takes over Egypt, which is the most important of the Roman provinces because it's the one that can starve Rome. All of the food for Italy comes out of Alexandria. And when she takes Alexandria, she really scares the life out of them.
And you'd have to think, you know, this is long before we had equal opportunity. So it must have been, she was the only female emperor of Rome. She must have been pretty special, you would have thought.
She's pretty special. And she really kind of seems to have absolutely no fear at all. And to take on Rome and to really think that you can take on the Roman army. And technically she has an infant son who she says she is making the emperor, but he's literally a baby. So she's not really. So she has this real self-belief that she can do it. And if it had been any other opponent. I think she probably would have got even further, but unfortunately she was defeated by the one guy who was able to reunite the entire empire under one banner again, who's called Aurelian, and he defeated like three separate splits and separate empires and also a load of raiders, so he was really, really good. But any other of the rubbisher emperors of that time, she would have definitely gone further.
And there were a few around, let's face it. Rubbish emperors.
Yeah, there were. There were a lot of rubbish ones at that time who all have silly names, but Aurelian, annoyingly, was a good one.
Woz says, what about Wonder Woman? Not sure if she quite qualifies, Woz. Andrew says, Andrew Cabernates nominates Queen Isabella I of Castile, the first to be known as Queen of Spain.
She's a good one.
Yeah. Do you know anything about her?
Yes, so she ruled with her husband, and they are the couple who oversaw the Spanish Empire and the expansion of Spanish power into North America and South America. So, they really are a power couple between them. They're really cool.
I read a book by Andrew Marr called The History of the World, BBC journalist Andrew Marr. I'm probably familiar with his work. Historian and presenter, wonderful series he did on the history of the world, and he made the point that Spain became a European power because when the Mongols came across, Genghis Khan and his armies came across from Asia, they basically sacked most of Europe, but stopped at the mountain ranges that bordered Spain, so they never got as far as Spain. And for that reason, Spain became the dominant power in Europe because everywhere else had been sorted out by the Mongols, which was very interesting, I thought.
Yeah. The Mongols depleting quite a lot of Central Europe did help out a lot of parts of Western Europe. But Isabella married, I think, her cousin. Is Ferdinand her cousin, something like that, and they unite Spain and then are able to use that kind of this combined power of two kingdoms to really expand power. And then they finance Christopher Columbus, which obviously then brings them all of the money and power that comes from everything they take out of South America. So
very interesting. All right, now there's a couple of Egyptians in there as well, which we should mention, because they're ahead of their time quite a long way.
They were. They were doing it before anybody else had even got writing systems together. So we have Hatshepsut, who is the one that is probably the most famous because we have lots of statues of her.
Is she the Sphinx?
I think so. But we have lots of statues of her, but she was always represented as a man. So she started as a regent to her stepson. She made herself regent when he was two, and then she just kind of gradually inched him off of the throne and inched herself onto it.
How did she do that?
he was a child, so what's he going to do? She basically just kept taking power and titles away and giving them to herself. And then when he was about nine, she just declared herself pharaoh, which just means king in Egyptian. Yeah. So she just made herself a female king. And she then ruled for 21 years. When she died, he got to take over again. So he didn't lose out completely. But which is unusual for a female king. But she ruled for 21 years and really built loads of quite famous parts of the Egyptian landscape. So the Karnak Temple complex is a really big part of her building complex. And she does loads of stuff in terms of making Egypt look like it does, and built her own pyramid and went around representing herself as a fully legitimate king who just happened to be a woman, which is really unusual, and it's quite interesting that they had no way of understanding a queen, but they could understand a female king.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. she's a man in all of her statues, but she has, it will say, but this she'll use feminine words to describe herself.
Did she wear a fake beard?
Yeah, the wooden beard, yeah.
She did.
Cleopatra does that as well in her in her statues and her imagery. So because that's what a king looks like, a king has to have a beard. So the fact that it's a queen doesn't change that.
Was it just in statues, or did she go around in life with a beard on?
As far as we know, only in statues. Okay. But I suppose in ceremonial context, she might have worn the beard.
I wonder how they felt about being depicted with a beard.
Yeah, it's a shame there's no writing about it. But yeah.
And, of course, the Sphinx, you can see clearly the bearded women thing on the statue of the Sphinx, can't you?
Yeah, and it is, like, that is, in. You have to have a beard in order to be a ruler. So no matter who you are, you have to have a beard.
It's a very quirky notion, the female king, even that sort of phrase itself is like, okay.
It is, yeah. You find it in a couple of places. So the another one that's on here
Can I just ask you this? It says not the Sphinx. That's alleged to have been built even before the pyramids, probably by the Phoenicians. Is that right?
I don't know, actually.
I'm not sure. I could be wrong. Phoenicians, of course, where we get most of the English language from. That's where...
It is where all the writing comes from,
indeed. So, look, not that I'm aware of. As far as my research goes, that the Sphinx is actually modelled on the Egyptian queen that you're talking about there, or Egyptian female king that you're talking about there.
I don't know. Somebody will have to ring in and tell us.
Okay, now, she wasn't the first Egyptian pharaoh, though, was she?
She isn't. She's actually the second. So she's around in about 1400s BCE, so like 3,500 years ago. But 400 years before her, there was another woman who was called Sobeknefru, and she was the first Egyptian female pharaoh. She's not so famous because after she died, somebody went round and destroyed kind of all of her statues. So they all have the face taken off of them. So she obviously wasn't enormously popular. But she asserted herself as the queen, as the female pharaoh in her own right, rather than as a as any kind of regent. She just said, "I'm the daughter of Amenhotep III, so I'm going to take the throne," and then ruled for about 3 years. We don't know much about her reign, but we know it was unpopular because they destroyed all of her statues and seemed to have really tried to erase whatever she did, and she was the very end of her dynasty, so she's the last person, but she is the first woman to call herself the pharaoh and to give herself what's called the royal titularies, which is this five names that pharaohs had, which are like god names. So she's the first one. She was the trailblazer, and it didn't go well for her. It rarely does for trailblazers.
Wasn't she a very clever military strategist as well?
We do not know anything about what she did.
Okay. I've got here, though, that she she stopped the Roman expansion into...
Oh, no, that is the Sudanese queen, Amaranius. So she's a good 2,000 years later. She's Sudanese from Kush.
She prevented
the Romans.
I've misread that. Yeah, so we will move down there. So Sudan, now we're in the first century. I didn't even know there was a place called Kush. Where's Kush?
Yeah. So Kush is literally what is now the Sudan. So it's on the border of Egypt, and is the furthest that the Romans got into sub-Saharan Africa. And they, after they defeated Cleopatra, they really took over Egypt and kept pushing and pushing their power as far as they could and kept building temples and putting up statues to Augustus. Amiranius, who was the queen of Kush, did not like this. And so she invaded Egypt in order to try to defeat them and to show them her power, and stole a statue of Augustus and took his head off and buried it under one of her own temples, which that head is now in the British Museum. It's the Mero head, if anybody has ever been there, which is the big, terrifying bronze head that still has its glass eyes in and therefore looks horrifying. But as a result of this and then her resistance to the Romans, she forced them into a peace treaty and made the Romans basically stay in Egypt and never push any further south. And they never did again, for her dynasty lasted for a good another 300 years. And she remained a powerful African nation in sub-Saharan Africa until well into the 3rd century. And all because she said, absolutely not, I'm not having this, and checked their expansion into Africa.
Went on the front foot there and stopped them before they...
She did. She took the initiative, which a lot of people didn't because they were very afraid of the Romans, with good reason, because mostly they would just fight until they won. But she forced them into a peace treaty and then somehow got them to keep to that peace treaty.
I've got someone suggesting that the Sphinx was built before the pyramids, 5000 BC. Might have to check up on that one later. I've got a couple of texts here that we'll read to you. Helene, Emperor Constantine's mother, through her son, she was responsible for bringing Christianity to the Eastern Roman Empire. That's from Luke.
She was, and she discovered, the legend goes that she discovered the first, discovered the true cross that Jesus was crucified on. There's a whole legend about her discovering it, and all of the bits of the true cross that are scattered across the world now and are in Jerusalem are the bits that she allegedly discovered. She's a saint now because of that. So yeah.
Has anybody ever checked on whether those little bits of cross were actually relics?
I don't think so, because now they're very, very tiny. They've got split up and spread across the world, and all of the bits that are in various places. So there's one still in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. There's one in South America, and there's a few bits elsewhere, but they're splinters. I don't know that you could test them without them falling to pieces.
Very interesting.
People used to bite bits off of the Holy Cross, which is...
Worth a bit of money too. They were flogging them for all sorts of
exactly.
Look, we're talking about the coolest women rulers in history this morning on our program with Dr. Emma Salvin, who's a history and co-host of the History is Sexy podcast. I've got a couple of other texts here, Emma, that I'll read to you. Joe in Cobden says, "Hi, Emma. I'm a huge fan of Emma and have read all her books."
There
you go. My favourite woman boss is Kutulun, the Mongol princess who wrestled men who wanted to marry her and took their horses when they invariably lost. Boss, she says.
We love a woman who knows her worth.
Yes.
I like the idea that she wants somebody who will live up to her, not just in terms of their nobility, but who will also be able to, like, fight her if they need to.
Yep. So she sounds like a pretty interesting one.
Yes. A lot of the Mongol princesses are pretty great, but she's a proper, shooting arrows while riding on a horse, and also is kind of a great advisor to her father. So he's the one that he will go to. It's a Kaidu, I think, is her father, she's the kid that he always goes to for advice, and helps him rule well.
Speaking of testing the men around her, one of your other figures here that's on your list, the Angolan queen, who was particularly hard on any male suitors.
She was quite hard on everyone, to be fair, but Nzinga of what is now Angola, and Ndongo Matamba, is this queen who rules that area of Africa at the time when the Portuguese Empire and the Dutch empires are fighting over the resources in Africa, and basically are running the transatlantic slave trade, are really depleting the entire continent. And she took on the Portuguese, largely by allying with the Dutch, and kept them largely out of her kingdoms. But she would also allegedly force men to fight each other to the death for the right to have sex with her.
Right, okay. It's a tough gig.
which is great. but she would apparently keep, she had like basically like some men do in various places, she kept like a harem of men, and then when she would make them fight to the death, or at least fight to surrender for the privilege of spending the night with her.
Ooh, tough gig. I don't know if I'd like to be in that room.
Yeah.
Luke has just sent this one, Pope Joan.
Oh, yes.
Who's Pope Joan?
Pope Joan is a legendary figure, sadly, but it's this kind of ninth century legend who was believed to have be a very intelligent woman who disguised herself as a man so that she could enter the enter monasteries, and then did so well as being a religious figure that she was eventually elected pope, and became a female pope, disguised as a man for a good 20 or 30 years. But these days, she is considered to be like a romantic legend from the medieval period. But she was definitely believed in for quite a long time that this woman managed to become a pope. And there are stories of other kind of female saints disguising themselves as men so that they can enter monasteries or become priests, and so they can live religious lives without the bother of being women.
Actually, Clancy wanted to say Angola's warrior queen, Ninjinga, as well.
Yeah.
I'm having trouble. So Clancy remembered her as well. It's a pretty interesting story. But I've got, so that was obviously from Angola as well. She's a pretty interesting one, that one.
She is. She did not, she's one of these people who has the... you know, she's not an unqualifiedly kind of good person. She sells people from rival nations into slavery in order to protect her own people, and doesn't seem to have a problem with that in particular, in order to expand her own power. But she's overthrown at one point and just then goes to another kingdom, takes it over, reinvades her previous kingdom, and then has like a second period of rule. So she's also just, you can't keep her down.
A bit of ambition there. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And also, as, I don't know if you mentioned that, she played the slave traders off against each other, which was
interesting. She did, yeah. Very happily played them. In which her main aim was clearly, firstly, her own power, but also to protect people under her power. And she didn't, sometimes that meant depleting the other armies of her enemies in Africa by selling their captives into slavery, which is a thing that happened fairly regularly.
I've got here Isabella was the instigator of the Spanish Inquisition, which terrified the rest of Europe. She was a Hadrian and a bit of a monster as well, says Annie in Bayswater.
A lot of them are kind of monstrous. Like when you have enough stories about them, I think it is. It's largely a part that if you are going to be any kind of monarch in the pre-modern world, you're generally kind of terrible, because it involves usually either slavery or putting people to death, or both, or terrible wars. And that's the same for men and women. But also, I think that women feel that they need to be harder a lot of the time, and a lot of the women are kind of more brutal in order to protect their power. Mm.
Bit of negative discrimination.
Exactly.
Hey, look, I've got here, apparently, I don't know if this is true or not, after Pope Joan, the papal throes supposedly had a hole underneath so they could check that it was a man. Is that right?
I don't know. I hope not, but that's pretty funny.
That is pretty funny.
I like the idea of them having to have a check. There's a Robert Harris novel about that, though.
Is there?
Called Conclave, about a female pope. Yeah, everybody discovering that the pope is female. It's a good fun thriller.
Hey, look, Bobsled said, I like the strong leader Lagartha in the series Vikings, were there real-life equivalents in Viking history, says Bobsled. I'm not sure about the Vikings. You'll be able to answer that one, but I know there was an English queen who did well to fend off the Vikings, wasn't there?
There was Ethelfled, Lady of the Mercians, as she is called, who was one of the only female rulers in Anglo-Saxon England, and she's the daughter of Alfred the Great, who is the king known for uniting England under one banner and unifying it. But she took over Mercia, which was like the main kingdom, one of the two main kingdoms in Anglo-Saxon England in the 9th century. And she took over when her husband died, who's Ethelred, and alongside her father in Wessex, she fought the Vikings who had invaded England and had settled and called themselves the Danelaw. And she fought alongside her army, led them into war, built loads of defences, and was instrumental in kind of driving the Danelaw out of England in a way that people really surprised people, because Anglo-Saxons weren't too into women in general. But she did a great job of really fighting, properly fighting as well, not just sitting at home and sending off other people, but properly being a part of the attacking forces.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Look, and the Vikings, did they have any women warriors of note?
We do have shield maidens. Gartha, I think, is a legendary one, who this idea that of a female warrior. But they're in I know that in archaeology they have turned up bodies of women who are buried with shields and buried with weaponry and things like that. So it seems that they were something that did happen, that there were women. As far as I know, there are no, other than legendary ones, there are no real female Viking kind of leaders.
It tends to come from the mythology, perhaps, than anything else, the whole...
Kind of mythological storytelling, legend, like King Arthur-y kind of stuff.
Yeah, Valhalla and all that business.
Yeah.
I've got here, someone said apparently the Vatican has a chair where they actually check to see if the Pope is male. After the Pope joke, thank you. Luke said, what about Boadicea? Now, we mentioned her before a little bit. She's not on your list, but certainly someone worth mentioning. She didn't acquire huge amounts of land or anything. She wasn't ambitious in that way, but certainly she had a bit of attitude and, you'd have to say girl power.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. So she, led the final revolt, really, or one of the final revolts against the Romans in Britain. So she is a leader of the Iceni, who are in the east of England. And when Roman power became too oppressive in the 60s, so about 15 years after they had invaded England, she raised an army. She united the British under one banner, which was very hard to do, especially at that time, and led a huge army against the Romans and defeated a legion and burned down at least 3 and possibly up to 9 towns in England, including London. And you can see in the archaeology that there is what's called the Boudiccan destruction layer, like this burnt layer where she really burnt the hell out of them, and then was finally, unfortunately, defeated at the Battle of Watling Street. But for about a year or so, she led a good, a proper uprising against the Romans that very nearly succeeded.
I'm not really surprised I didn't hear more about her when I studied history at school. It's a funny one because... You know how I found out the name? A lot of people say Boadicea, Boudica, you're saying. Do you ever watch The Vicar of Dibley?
Yes.
Is it Dawn French, is it the character in that? She plays Geraldine Granger, the Reverend Geraldine Granger.
Yeah.
And she reveals in one episode that Geraldine's not her real name. And she doesn't want to tell anyone what her real name is. And eventually comes out, of course, it's Boadica or Boadicea. And that was the first I'd ever heard the name and going, okay. And then I looked it up and go, wow, this is a very interesting bit of British history that we haven't heard about.
So we in Britain, you hear about her all the time because there's like big statues of her. There's one in London. There's one in Colchester, which is a place that she burnt down, which is pretty funny. She was used as like a... Queen Victoria and Queen Elizabeth both really like to use her as a representation, so she's all over the place in England. But you're safer from her over there.
Look, June said, what about Jemima, the Welsh heroine? Do you know who that is?
I don't know who that is.
We might need a little bit more information there, June.
Yeah, someone's going to have to tell me.
Look, I've got. We should talk about some of these Asian ones too, because there was a very powerful Chinese emperor, who, and there weren't many women Chinese emperors as well, were there? Empress.
No, no. Another place that doesn't. I mean, no. There are not that many places that that like a female ruler as general rule. and very often, women have to fight their way to the throne, or really fight for it, and then cling quite hard to their power. But the kind of one and only real female ruler is Empress Wu Zetian, who is a 7th century, who interrupted the Tang dynasty. Basically, she started her own dynasty, but it was really just her. She's amazing. She started her life as a courtesan within the kind of hundreds of courtesans in her husband's harem, basically. And she outcompeted all of the other consorts to become his favorite, then had his two other favorites executed, and worked her way in to become basically the true power behind her husband's throne. He became a figurehead for her desires. And when he died and a Tang successor was placed on the throne, she immediately just overthrew him, just came up from behind and had him overthrown, made her son technically emperor, and then, much like Hatshepsut, just forced her son off of the throne and forced him to abdicate, made herself empress, and then ruled for 40 very brutal years. She is... took all of the tricks she had learned as a courtesan and turned them into making China quite powerful, like expanding, but also basically running a police state. She had like a little secret police, and she had anyone who she thought was a threat to her power executed, did some massacres, but ruled for 4 decades as the empress, until she was basically too sick to rule and was forced to abdicate by people who then tried to eradicate her name. They kind of went back through the records and had her name changed to consort rather than empress.
Has she remembered?
They couldn't wipe out the fact that she'd done it.
How is she remembered in modern China?
She is now remembered, as far as I know, as quite an impressive but terrifying figure. She was not the kind of person that you would want to live around, necessarily.
No, she's making my knees shake, I'll tell you.
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't want to be in her court unless you were really, really on her side. But these days, I think she is remembered as someone who's quite impressive, as someone who really fought for herself and fought for her rise is amazing, like going from courtesan, which is like very low, to basically shooting up into the very top of the hierarchy.
Yes,
as a woman is considered to be something that's pretty cool.
I reckon a lot of ambition there to be able to pull that one off. Hey, yeah. Look, I've got the full name, Geraldine Granger's full name. Mick just put it up on the screen because Boadicea was just one of them. She was Reverend Boadicea, Julie Andrews, Dick Van Dyke, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, chim-chiminy-chim-chiminy-chim-chim-cheree, Geraldine Granger Kennedy. Thanks, Mick.
Now, in fairness, I wouldn't tell people that name either.
Hey,
that's not going to fit on a form.
No. While we're in China, I've got to ask you about the queen, or the figure who commanded the Guangdong Pirate Confederation, 40 to 60,000
yes.
pirates. What was the Guangdong yes. Pirate Confederation?
So the Guangdong Pirate Federation was basically a coalition or a union of all of these pirate fleets in 18th century South China Sea. So there's a big piracy problem. This is the time when, the great seafaring nations are going back and forth from Asia to Europe and Europe to Asia. And she, Zheng Yaoshao, her name is, and she married a pirate and then worked with him to create this pirate confederation so that all of the separate pirate fleets would come together under one, as one army with one ruler, and then kind of and then they would be able to take on the big national fleets and the fleets of like the East India Company and the Portuguese Empire, and they'd be able to take them on together rather than being little small.
And how did they go?
They went really well. Her husband, they were doing well and just kind of going along until her husband mysteriously fell overboard and died, at which point she took control of the whole fleet. And then they became very, very aggressive and started, under her command, managed to destroy half of the fleet of the Qing dynasty, managed to take on the Portuguese, managed to take on the East India Company. They went all along up the Pearl River, completely destroying ships. There were hundreds and hundreds of them raiding towns up and down the Pearl River, and really stressed out everybody to the extent that everybody else had to form a coalition against them and fought in order to blockade them. But when she finally surrendered, she still had enough power, or she surrendered cleverly before she was completely defeated, so that she could use the leverage she still had. So she ended up being being given some ships to take away with her, a full pardon, and they also gave her a cash settlement.
She did all right, haven't she?
So she had her cake and ate it too.
When you say she amassed, or they had to come together to defeat her, who are we talking about? The Portuguese?
And the Portuguese, the British and the Chinese,
They all teamed up. The Chinese even teamed up with them.
Yeah, because she was such a problem of destroying ships and making it so dangerous for people, for traders to go in and out across the South China Sea, and so dangerous for the people in the ports along the way, that they decided that they would all join together in order to defeat her because she was causing so many problems for everybody, is impressive.
Do you reckon she pushed him? Oh, is she there, Em?
I mean, he was a pirate for a long time before she came along, and then all of a sudden he just fell oversea. I don't want to make suggestions.
You dropped out just when we...
Maybe.
You dropped out, believe it or not, your line, just when we got the important part of that question. So you don't want to speculate whether she pushed him or not. We won't push you on that one then.
I mean, I wouldn't want to say... I will say that she married his nephew immediately after he died.
Sounds a bit sus to me.
I wouldn't want to speculate.
We've got to wind it up. We have to mention Catherine the Great, though. She came up on the program when we were talking about history the other day. In fact, it came up because we were talking about hemp, believe it or not, and how Catherine the Great, she was a pretty smart and brutal ruler as well. She cornered the hemp market. She bought up all the British hemp factories, is my understanding, and then cornered the market and sold it back, tried to sell it back to the British Navy for increased price, increased profit, and did very well. So she's obviously a pretty smart cookie.
She was a smart cookie, and she's not even Russian, but she became Empress of Russia. She and she's another one who overthrew her husband. She was German originally, or Prussian, married Peter III, who was rubbish, and she didn't like him at all, and nobody really seems to have liked him, and even his parents liked her more than they liked him. And so when she moved to Russia and launched herself into learning Russian, converting to Russian Orthodoxism from Lutheranism, and threw herself into being a Russian ruler. And then when her husband inherited the throne from his father, she basically just shoved him off and took the throne herself in a near enough bloodless coup. And made herself the empress and was pretty good at it, really. She expanded the empire. She cornered the hemp market. She was really, really into European philosophy. She considered herself to be an enlightened despot,
She'd be worth talking about
at the time.
Just about in her own right, Catherine the Great. Listen, we've got to go. Em, it's always a pleasure to you. So much, much appreciated for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Dr. Emma Southern, the historian and co-host of the History is Sexy podcast.